Welcome to Indie Newswire, a weekly review of breaking news published on independent media center newswires from all over the world.
It's the 20th of June, 2008, today on the Indie Newswire. I-69 is under attack right now. Up-to-date information on the raid, issues behind the fight against the NAFTA superhighway. We'll hear audio from KBOO in Portland, Radio for All, Indie Bay, KPFT, and more. Information about Maria Isabel Vasquez Jimenez, the farm worker who died in the fields last month. She died picking two-buck chuck. Police brutality in Portland, a campaign of political property destruction on the West Coast, not just here in Santa Cruz. Sentencing in Green Scare cases, the campaign to free Chip Fitzgerald. White supremacist action in Santa Cruz. Independent media in trouble. Background on the teachers' struggle in Puerto Rico and SEIU's complicity in repression of the movement. And in Mexico, an anniversary in Oaxaca, attacks in Chiapas escalating, and the response worldwide. Tomorrow is a global day of action in support of the Zapatistas. This is the Indie Newswire. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM. All this and more coming up, but first, from Portland, a cyclist was tasered by the cops just last week. Stay tuned. It's from KBOO.
Can you describe what happened?
I was pulled over on Southeast 7th near Alder, and it was just barely dusk. I was pulled over for not having lights on my bike. The second officer told me how dangerous it was to ride without lights and saw another biker riding northbound on 7th and pointed to him and said, "Look, he doesn't have lights either. See how hard it is to see him." At that point, he jogged out into the middle of the road, yelled, "Stop," to the bicyclist, and went. The bicyclist sort of looked at him, seemed confused, and was riding pretty slowly. The cop took two or three steps maybe after him, grabbed him off of his bike, threw him on the ground, picked him up, ran him up onto the sidewalk into a building, slammed him against the building, and then started tasering him. They tasered him many times, and he didn't seem to be fighting back. They probably tasered him for about, I don't know, several minutes at least. And he was yelling, "Stop," and "Why are you doing this?" and "It hurts," but didn't seem to be attacking, assaulting, or anything like that to the officers.
Now, I talked to the spokesman for the Portland police that said that the bicyclist did not comply with the officer's demands and then started a scuffle with the officer. Do you think that that portrayal is accurate?
I don't think that's accurate at all. He didn't stop immediately, but it wasn't obviously apparent that he was a police officer. The police car was behind me, which was on the southbound side of the road. And he ran out into the middle of the road and yelled, "Stop," he didn't say, like, "I'm a police officer, stop," or anything like that. He just ran out and said, "Stop." And so if I were in the same position as Reverend Phil, I wouldn't necessarily know what was going on or who it was that was yelling, "Stop." So he didn't stop immediately, but he wasn't going very fast or trying to evade anyone, obviously, because the officer was able to take a few steps after him and pull him off his bike. And if you're trying to outrun someone on foot on a bike, it's pretty easy to do. I heard at one point he asked, why are you doing this?" And the officer said, "Because you were resisting." And he said, "I'm not resisting. You told me to relax, and I'm relaxed." He didn't appear to be doing anything inappropriate at all.
Well, thank you very much. Again, we've been speaking with Diana, who witnessed Reverend Phil being tasered. This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
The I-69 tree sitters are facing eviction right now. This morning, individuals protesting the construction of Interstate 69 through southern Indiana were greeted by Indiana State Police. What began with a handful of individuals has turned into a focal point for resistance to the highway, with a small tree village and a large camp on the ground. This morning at 5:30 a.m., Indiana State Police showed up en masse, forced ground support to leave, and began sending climbers up to evict two individuals occupying the trees. As of this moment, this was posted this morning to Portland Indy Media. Three people have been arrested trying to reach the sit. One sitter has been arrested, and everyone driving close to the sit is being detained. The last sitter will probably be arrested soon, the sit and the camp destroyed. But this is only the beginning of land-based resistance to the construction of Interstate 69. Resistance will continue, but the movement will as well, and at the moment we need your support. Please consider donating to the campaign, flooding Indiana's governor's office with calls, or organizing solidarity actions in your own community. They may have won this battle, but we will never let them build this road. You can donate online. There's a PayPal. There's some phone numbers for Indiana Governor Mitch Daniels, the Department of Transportation, State and District, and the company doing some of the work, Goman Asphalt and Construction. Suggestions: target local branches of companies involved in construction. Michael Baker Corporation is involved in planning Section 5 of the highway. Has offices around the country. You can find all of these locations at mbakercorp.com. And they're urging people to come to Southern Indiana to help out in person. So, for those of you who are aware of the campaign, it's somewhat, I ruefully report that there's an attack going on right now. For those of you who aren't aware of what's happening in Southern Indiana, here's some information. The construction of this highway is necessary for the expansion of neoliberal capitalism throughout the Americas. Ceasing construction will not only protect forests, wetlands, and farms, but also deal a direct blow to the infrastructure needed for the continued expansion of free trade. This struggle is fought in solidarity with communities south of the border fighting infrastructure projects that threaten to evict and destroy communities there. I-69 is a NAFTA superhighway. Already constructed from Canada to Indianapolis, projected to extend down into Mexico. This highway is intended for the mass transport of goods and resources, to further exploit workers and the land, and to lessen companies' accountability in terms of human and environmental rights. In 2008, they intend to begin construction of this road through southwestern Indiana, evicting hundreds of rural families, destroying hundreds of acres of land, and devastating the habitat of countless species of animals, many of them already endangered. So some facts about I-69. The new road in Indiana, in the latest estimate, will cost over $3.5 billion, a price which will only go up with the rising cost of oil. The state currently has only $750 million earmarked for this construction, a fact that leads many to the conclusion that the state will reinstate the idea of a toll road. Over 400 families will be evicted from their homes along the 142-mile route in Indiana alone. 7,000 acres of land will be paved over by construction of the new terrain I-69 and related development. 5,300 acres of farmland, 1,510 acres of forest land, 95 acres of wetlands. At least 400 acres of land containing karst features like caves, sinkholes, and underground streams will be damaged or disturbed. The Department of Transportation's own study shows that 70% of people in Indiana oppose the new road, while an independent study places that number in the 90s. Yet the governor is still pushing the project. The proposed I-69 route in southwest Indiana will only save 10 to 14 minutes on a trip to Indianapolis in comparison to current routes. The proposed highway, being part of a huge free trade infrastructure plan, will bring thousands of new trucks and cars through southwest Indiana each day, further increasing land, air, and water pollution in an already heavily polluted industrial region. I-69 cannot bring a big industry to southwest Indiana, as its supporters claim, because most counties in the area are already in non-attainment of federal Clean Air Act laws. There's no guarantee of distribution centers either, because hundreds of other cities along the route provide lucrative locations. Number 9, I-69 already exists from the Michigan-Canada border to Indianapolis and serves as a major artery for international free trade between the U.S. and Canada. And finally, I-69 is part of the NAFTA Superhighway Plan, which includes similar infrastructure projects in South America, IRSA, Central America, and Mexico, the PPP, Plan Puebla Panama, and Canada, the Atlantica. And it is meant to provide multinational corporations a more cost-effective way to move goods and capital throughout each country, not to mention allowing them to cheaply exploit the natural resources of Latin America. You can get more information at stopi69.wordpress.com. And you can stay tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz 101.1 in order to get more information and learn more as this story develops. Both of the tree sitters who were arrested during this morning's early morning raid are seeking bail money for ground support as well. The whereabouts of the ground support team cannot be confirmed at this time, but it is assumed that they were arrested as well. This is a post from 3 p.m. since it's 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. I don't see how that's possible. But from the 20th, strangely enough, the time zones seem to be shifting. But it is assumed that they were arrested as well. The ground support team were working, to get all of the information necessary to bail these people out of jail. But we need your help in raising money. So, again, check out stopi69.wordpress.com because I-69 is under attack. 25 officers from three different agencies descended on the scene. The officers worked to bring both of the tree-borne protesters down and arrested them, and we'll be sending out more information very soon. If you hate this road, if you hate seeing cops pull people from trees and smear their faces in poison ivy as they arrest them, if you hate seeing authorities with power trips having a jolly time ripping people without any form of safety from trees, then there are some numbers for you to call. Again, check out stopi69.wordpress.com. There's a whole bunch of more information on there. So that's what's going on with that story. Stay tuned to the Indie Newswire. You're listening to Free Radio 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. Sometimes I feel like the Indie Newswire is the weekly roundup of bad news, so I brought some bad news music today. This is a website I never thought I'd be reading from on the Indie Newswire, in terms of a roundup of IMC posts and open publishing and independent media. I'm reading from decanter.com, the route to all good wine, because looking around for stories about Maria Vasquez Jimenez, I couldn't find very much in the corporate media that was critical of the companies that allowed a 17-year-old undocumented pregnant farm worker to work a 9-hour shift in the sun, collapse from exhaustion, and die of heat stroke in the arms of her fiancé. This happened in California in May. So I'm reading from decanter.com. The 17-year-old who died last month pruning vines in California was working in vineyards part-owned by Francia of Tubuchuck fame. On the 13th of May, Maria Isabel Vasquez Jimenez, 17, passed out from heat exhaustion while pruning vines in mid-90-degree temperature and later died in hospital. She was 2 months pregnant. Jimenez was working in vineyards operated and owned by West Coast Grape Farming, which is owned in part by Francia of California's Bronco Wine Company, the producer of the Charles Shaw brand. Her fiancé told officials that the supervisors did not call for medical help after Jimenez collapsed, didn't offer her water or shade, and later told him to lie to hospital staff about his fiancé's age and whom she was working for. As I mentioned, looking through corporate media for stories about this, many said she was 18, which would change the labor laws. As a minor, she was working more than double the time allowed. And so that's an important point, again, that decanter.com is reporting, but the Lodi paper and the Sacramento Bee are not reporting. Again, back to decanter.com. Other workers said that the labor contractor for whom they were working, Merced Farm Labor, had not provided sufficient water or shade during the workers' 9.5-hour shifts. Labor laws prohibit minors under the age of 18 from working such long shifts. Merced Farm Labor has been cited and fined, had been cited and fined last year by work safety inspectors for failing to train its employees and supervisors in how to prevent and treat heat exhaustion. According to Kate McGuire, spokesperson for the California Division of Occupational Safety and Health, Jimenez's death is under investigation and they are in the process of revoking the labor contractor's license. My understanding is that has happened this week. Criminal charges may be brought. I'm not sure if that has happened, but there has been a lawsuit brought against Merced Farm Labor. In the wake of Jimenez's death, 500 farm workers marched for 4 days, arriving at the Sacramento Capitol last Wednesday to demand safer work conditions. McGuire says that in 2006, the last year for which reliable figures are available, there were 8 confirmed deaths from heat exhaustion, 46 confirmed cases of heat illness among laborers working outside in all industries, from farming to construction, mining, or manufacturing. With summertime temperatures in the Central Valley regularly topping 110 degrees, any sort of outdoor work is potentially dangerous. It's not just agriculture, says McGuire. We have to make sure this doesn't happen again, said California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. The governor signed legislation in 2005 requiring employers to provide workers with 4 cups of water per hour, shaded resting areas, paid break periods of at least 5 minutes, safety training, and an emergency plan. Since 2005, OSHA records show that both inspections of labor conditions and citations for violations of these regulations have increased steadily. So a comment posted here I want to read because, again, I'm just surprised at this website. It's the route to all good wine. Decanter.com has a comment section. I want to read what Larry wrote. Because it's similar to an independent media site or the Sentinel or any other corporate media where, you have an opportunity to respond. And this is a call out to those of you who enjoy any product. I find that people who are conscious consumers, or consider themselves conscious consumers who would boycott, certain corporations somehow have a lack of judgment when it comes to alcohol. That people will carefully choose their food or which businesses they buy from. In many ways, in many situations, commercial transactions. But when it comes to alcohol, people don't think twice about patronizing Coors, for example, or patronizing 2 Buck Chuck. So this is an important note. Anyone who thinks that there isn't a cost greater than $2 per bottle of wine has their head in the ground. The cost to the community at large to pay for medical care for those who are not given proper water for hydration is only a small part of these hidden costs. The use of chemical applications in this type of vineyards contributes to the degradation of groundwater, consumes massive amounts of fossil fuel to produce and distribute. The substandard wages paid to migrant workers is subsidized throughout the community by food stamps and welfare. Mass-produced wine is in the same category as mass-produced food. Concerned citizens should be looking towards more responsible producers. So next time you think of how cheap 2 Buck Chuck is, remember why. Because they're exploiting farm laborers as young as 17 to the point of death in the fields right here in California. That's why 2 Buck Chuck is so cheap. Because their farm workers don't even have access to shade and water. And they're treated as expendable labor when 17-year-old pregnant women are working 9.5-hour shifts in 110-degree heat right here in Lodi. So stay tuned. Freak Radio. I've got some more bad news and I've got some more good news. But the Modesto Bee says the state has shut down Merced Farm Labor. State authorities have shut down the contractor that employed a teen field worker who died May 16th. Department of Industrial Relations officials said they took the rare action Thursday to protect other workers from imminent danger, including relatives of Vasquez Jimenez. So June 4th, the state began a 30 to 90 day process to revoke the company's license. Officials discovered the company hadn't disclosed on a renewal application last September that it had been cited in 2006. The company has never paid its fines. In addition, on the morning of June 4th, labor officials at an inspection sweep at the farm came across Merced Farm Labor employees and concluded that their supervisor did not have adequate heat stress preparation. So Merced Farm Labor has been shut down and their license revoked. So that's from the Department of Moderately Good News here, Free Radio 101.1. I'm going to find a song for you and we'll be right back. Thank you. further and final update on the Breonna Waters case. Ms. Waters was sentenced in Tacoma, Washington, yesterday, to 6 years in prison and 3 years of probation. She did receive the terrorism enhancement, and the judge recommended her to Dublin. The judge denied appeal bond and also the ability to self-surrender, which means that she'll remain in custody without having an opportunity to go home. Judge Burgess commented on the over 250 letters he received on Breonna's behalf. Neil Fox, her attorney, argued that the average of both Washington and Oregon cases was 1.5 years per arson. Mr. Fox argued for 5 years, serving 1.5, suspending 3.5, while the prosecution argued for 10. Breonna Waters spoke eloquently yesterday on her behalf. There were a dozen supporters for Breonna Waters in the courtroom. Finishing the bad news roundup before we get to some good news, I want to read a post from Indie Bay, Santa Cruz IMC by Blaze. While on a walk, a friend and I found several anti-immigration white supremacy posters on telephone poles on Mora and Potrero. So we're talking about the area around River Street and the lumberman's yard where day laborers gather, immigrant laborers. I'm going to read the flyer. It's posted and a pic. Immigration or invasion? If current trends continue, whites will be a minority in this country within the next 50 years. Non-whites are turning America into a third world slum. They come for welfare or to take our jobs. They bring crime. Let's send them home now. This is posted by the National Alliance, an organization of whites who aren't afraid to speak up for our race. And there's a website here. So this is posted around town. I haven't seen one, but I've seen here's the image is up on Santa Cruz IMC. And in a few minutes, there's a recorded message and a phone number there. We'll give a call and see what they have to say. These folks from the National Alliance, I hesitate to provide them a platform, but it shouldn't be too difficult to refute their arguments. So we'll get to that in just a few minutes. First, I want to play a song for you. Which I've been playing the shit out of the new Roots album. This is Game Theory.
More reefing in red man and them damaging MCs and my name retease. You endangered species. For what I do, I'm about to up the fees. I'm paper chase, motivated. I ain't the one to play with these cats. Instead of blades, you can have it your way, but I'd rather parlay. Just smoke OG and get cabbage all day to wait. Thought play causes your main thing to say. You style so splendid, you bout your business. You arousing my interest. You sharper than a shogun. You know the way you go, huh? Game, now I'm talking about. Hey, yo, I'm trying to get it at any cost, so it's no remorse when I'm blasting off like you've been asking for it. When black stepping the doors, all hats is off, your hands up in the air going back and forth. I'm about ready for a classic master car. I make it hotter than with Shaft in Africa. Jump out a black Porsche, huffing a fast cigar. Night riding on them like my last name Hasselhoff. Voted unlikely to succeed, cause my class was full of Nate, say it's cheaters and thieves. All it gave me was a good enough reason to leave, and put the writing on the wall for y'all to read it and read it. Cause I'm the force of the Lord, the rage of hell. You rather head for the hills than save yourself, my man. Rip drums like you ringing the bell, the king of the realm. You seen him do his thing in the fell, come on.
Hustle, that's short for hustlers. Speak black hate, world like productions. Trying to find our spots amongst the ruckus and beat. Sucker free and free chumps and busters, man. Yeah, get em, hustle, get em, hustle, get em, hustle.
Dreams with M16s with infrared beams. Blowing up president's cribs with cans of kerosene. Hijack the limousine with a strategic routine. Then blast my enemies and for the Caribbeans. A military guerrilla camp is ready for war. Lay your corner face down, place down your jewels, cash in 4-4. When I score, prepare for torture. Fuck around and make your town war sore. I'm from Illidale, the land where the killers dwell. My technique is the ambush, you guerrilla style. My instinct is of a killer well. Bang you up from head to toe with lyrics. I pack looking, I'm ill amount. My type subliminal, mentality spits the criminal. Importing heroin, international Senegal. A soldier takes a strike from a general. Use them like an iron or lead to choose them in the route.
This is a game, and I'm your specimen. You got to let me know, babe, so I can go.
Llegamos a la comunidad San Jerónimo Tulijá, donde las autoridades nos empezaron a presentar o a llevar donde ocurrieron los hechos. Primero nos comentan que llegaron como 100 elementos en la primera casa, en un primer sitio. Entraron en un sitio sin pedir permiso, se introdujeron en una casa donde estaban construyendo. Después, como a 60 o 50 metros más abajo, donde bajaron una vereda y otros en la carretera, llegaron a una casa, lo rodearon y tomaron del cuello a una compañera cargando su bebé. Uno de ellos gritó de la AFI que lo mataran, pero el otro, según sus... comentarios de la, sus testimonios de la señora es que otro gritó que no vinieron a matar personas. Después de que sucedió eso, en un lapso de unos minutos, se dirigieron a otro solar donde habían varias casas, habían casas de seguridad y iglesia, y otras casas de algunos compañeros bases de apoyo, donde rodearon varias casas, pero no, intentando entrar a las casas no lograron entrar. Las compañeras ya se habían organizado, y al fin, durante una hora, estuvieron los militares dispersos. Después las compañeras pudieron desalojarlos después de una hora.
You're listening to video and audio from a raid in southern Mexico, in Chiapas. Plan Mexico, which has worked its way through Congress, $1.4 billion U.S. aid package to Mexico in order to fight drugs. Ongoing fight against it. This is from the America's page of Indie Bay from Stop Plan Mexico. Mexico's law enforcement is extremely corrupt. Its members consume the drugs themselves, commit hundreds of human rights violations with impunity. The video shows a peaceful community in southern Mexico that was recently invaded and threatened by Mexican law enforcement just after the U.S. House voted to approve Plan Mexico. Our tax dollars would be spent on these kinds of abuses. It's important to urge the Senate to stop this initiative. The man was describing a raid, an invasion of a community, a community in support of La Otra Campaña, not a Zapatista community, but a indigenous community in support of some of the goals of the EZLN. There's a response to this, of course, escalation in raids. There's an informe here, there's information about the aggression against Zapatista communities. But the important part here for folks listening in the States is that tomorrow is a National Day of Action in support of Zapatista communities. There'll be a march in DF, the occupation of the Zocalo. There's a lot of cooperation and communication between radios in Mexico. 70 police, Chiapas State Police, and as the gentleman mentioned, from the Mexican equivalent of the FBI, AFI. 70 police enter the indigenous community of Cruston on June 11th. There's a march to the AFA, and the radio networks cooperated yesterday on the 18th, Wednesday, to broadcast information about the raid and the increased attacks, the escalation in paramilitary activity and in military activity in Chiapas and southern Mexico. So in the days following the approval of Plan Mexico in the U.S. House of Representatives, the Mexican military stepped up intimidation and escalation. This is not a surprise. The timing suggests that they were emboldened by the U.S. government's support and promises of increased funding, and that it wasn't a stretch to use this increased impunity. It was viewed as a rubber stamp of sorts. So the narcosphere, narco news, has a story by Kristen Bricker. It's from last month when the Mérida initiative was approved. In the House, 244 Democrats and 32 Republicans voted for this bill. 7 Democrats and 159 Republicans voted against it. The Senate approved a slightly different version, with Democrats unanimous in their approval, Republicans split evenly for and against. This is interesting breakdown of party lines. I don't often find myself agreeing across the board with either party, but the Democrats are in full support of Plan Mexico. the party is in full support, and those who toe the party line are in full support of sending military aid to Mexico. Bush requested $500 million in funding for Plan Mexico in 2008. The House approved $400 million over the next 2 years. The Senate approved $350 million. Secretary of State Condoleezza Rice and Mexican Ambassador to the U.S. Arturo Surigan rallied at the last minute using the murder of Mexico's National Police Force as a pretext to argue for more funding for Mexico's war on drugs. The Sinaloa drug cartel is rumored to be responsible for Milan's murder. So, the U.S. military government agencies such as USAID and the ATF, U.S. defense contractors such as Blackwater, mercenary firms, weapons manufacturers will receive funding to carry out Plan Mexico. Plan Mexico will provide resources, equipment, and training to the Mexican government, police, and military. According as passed by the House, Plan Mexico will provide equipment for the Mexican military for strengthening of military-to-military cooperation between the United States and Mexico. This includes helicopters, airplanes, and, again, a whole bunch of training. Following the Zapatista uprising and rising in 1994, the Mexican military strafed Chiapan indigenous communities using helicopters donated by the U.S. to combat drug trafficking and production. So this is no surprise. That Plan Mexico is going through as it is right now. They're again saying that there's a drug turf war going on and that Mexico's military and police need assistance. According to the Narcosphere and Kristen Bricker, there are two slightly more realistic reasons. Plan Mexico is an indispensable component of the Security and Prosperity Partnership, NAFTA on steroids, or NAFTA plus Homeland Security. The SPP calls for maximization of North American economic competitiveness in the face of growing exports from India and China, expedited means of resource extraction, secure borders against organized crime, international terrorism, and illegal migration, standardized regulatory regimes for health, food safety, and the environment, integrated energy supply through a comprehensive resource security pact, primarily about ensuring that the U.S. receives guaranteed flows from the oil in light of Middle East insecurity and hostile Latin American regimes, and coordination amongst defense forces. Number two, Plan Mexico supports the effort of one weak president, George Bush, to support another weak president, Felipe Calderón. George Bush can sympathize with Felipe Calderón. He knows what it's like to steal an election and then have to rule a country with an iron fist while faced with enormous unpopularity. Seeing as though Calderón is one of only two friends George Bush has in Latin America, the other being Colombia's Uribe, also the recipient of mind-boggling military funding, George Bush had to act. When Felipe Calderón took office in 2006, despite massive protests against the electoral fraud that brought him to power, one of the first things he did was deploy the military to drug cartel-dominated estates in the north, militarizing a large portion of Mexico without legislative approval. Mexicans and U.S. organizations have argued that this strategy is Calderón's attempt to bolster a weak presidency with a strong military alliance and warned that it could signal a return to the dirty war era. Plan Mexico represents the further militarization of Mexican society without legislative controls because it will provide U.S. resources and training to the Calderón-controlled military without Mexican congressional approval. Listeners to the show have heard a lot about Plan Mexico over the last few months, but I just wanted to bring you up to date. The money already promised but not delivered is already being spent oppressing the people of southern Mexico, and Chiapas in particular, where paramilitary and military uniformed military attacks have already increased in the last month. And again, a response, global response, is called for tomorrow. Tomorrow is the Día Global de Solidaridad con los Pueblos y Comunidades Zapatistas de Chiapas, the International Day of Solidarity with the people and communities of Chiapas and the Zapatistas. Again, with radio broadcasts, occupation of the Zocalo in Mexico City, solidarity actions throughout Mexico and worldwide. You'll hear more about this later in the program. But for now, I want to play a little bit more good news from the World Wide Web. Let's see here. A little bit more from KBOO. This is good news from Cuba. 101.1 FM. This is the Indy Newswire.
The Associated Press reported Monday that Cuba has officially authorized gender reassignment operations and will offer them free to qualifying citizens. The move, one of the latest in a series of changes implemented by President Raul Castro since he succeeded his elder brother Fidel, puts Cuba above any U.S. state in providing affordable access to gender reassignment surgery. When Raul Castro took over in February, his daughter, Mariela, who heads Cuba's National Center for Sex Education, called for LGBT civil rights and legalization of gender reassignment surgery. A resolution approving the surgery, signed by Cuba's health minister, José Ramón Balaguer, was posted on the internet over the weekend. The procedure would be available to authorized Cubans free of charge as part of the country's health care system. The island nation's Sex Education Center reported previously that 28 transsexual Cubans have asked to undergo gender reassignment, and that Cuban doctors have been trained by physicians from Belgium in preparation for the procedures. While it is not clear when the operations may begin, they will reportedly take place at a soon-to-be-established clinic for transsexual health. Cuba carried out a successful gender reassignment operation in 1988, but future surgeries were canceled when it sparked a negative public outcry. This has been Jacob Anderson Mitchell reporting for KABU Radio.
40 years is a long time, not just in the lives of individual men and women, but in the life of a people and of a nation. It's been a long time indeed since 1969. Today, 1969 is exactly as remote from us as the Great Depression was to people living in 69. 1969 is one quarter of the way back to the beginning of the Civil War. Relatively few who were adults then remain with us today. But Romaine Chip Fitzgerald is still around. A former member of the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party, Fitzgerald has been in prison since 1969 when he was convicted of murder and attempted murder at the age of 18. Fitzgerald was sentenced to death. But in the enlightened spirit of the early 1970s, the state of California renounced the death penalty and commuted all death sentences to life imprisonment. Most surviving inmates who were on California's 1972 death row have since been freed, but not Chip Fitzgerald. Released from California's youth prison system at about 1965 or 66, Fitzgerald resolved to dedicate his life to the service of his people. Like many other youngsters of that era, he came to see the Black Panther Party as part of the answer to hunger, to police brutality, to educational and healthcare systems which failed to meet human needs. Fitzgerald joined the Southern California chapter of the Black Panther Party and selflessly plunged himself into its routine of study and service, feeding hungry children each morning, tutoring, selling papers, and attending classes. It's now well known that government officials stepped far beyond boundaries of law and ethics in order to target, to frame, even to murder members and leaders of the Black Panther Party and other organizations deemed a threat to the established order. But now, nearly 40 years later, there is no doubt that Chip Fitzgerald presents no threat to society or to those around him. He has expressed repeated, sincere, and heartfelt contrition. He has asked forgiveness for the acts that led to his imprisonment. Fitzgerald has been an exemplary prisoner by any yardstick, earning no complaints whatsoever from his keepers, and counseling other inmates against bitterness and violence, advising them to take advantage of whichever educational opportunities are present. In recent years, Fitzgerald has suffered a stroke, and for a time he lost control over much of one side of his body. During his recovery, he walked with a cane. Chip's friends have secured him a job offer with the labor union, in which his spirit of unselfish dedication to the needs of others can be put to good use. On July 2, 2008, a parole board in California will consider Chip Fitzgerald's eligibility for release. Chip is a modest kind of guy, Bruce Richard, another former Southern California member of the Black Panther Party, told Black Agenda Report. He hasn't tried to assume any kind of public posture like some have. He's not pointing to himself saying, "What about me? I'm next." He's not that kind of guy. But it really is time. 39, almost 40 years really is enough. He's changed. The world has changed. We've all changed. It's time for Chip to come out and use whatever time he has left to make this a better world. Black Agenda Report wholeheartedly agrees, and we request that our readers sign the online petition found at www.freechip.org. That's www.freechip.org, and linked to at the bottom of this article, which will be presented to the parole board prior to the hearing. 39 years really is enough. It's time to release Chip Fitzgerald. For Black Agenda Report, I'm Bruce Dixon.
Same-gender couples eager to get hitched poured into the clerk's office to get their marriage licenses. Some waited to be married in one of the two chapels set up by the county. On her way out, one beaming newlywed said, "We're raised to believe in marriage. Words have power."
With this ring, I thee wed.
I thee wed.
This is my favorite part. By virtue of the authority vested in me as Deputy Commissioner of Civil Marriage, I now pronounce you married under the laws of the state of California. What a wonderful family. What a wonderful family. And it's great that you can share all the benefits that the rest of the citizens of this state are able to do.
That was Santa Clara County Supervisor Ken Yeager marrying Tina Salas and Kathleen Chavez Salas. The two have been together for 21 years, and they're one of the 4,000 couples who got married in 2004, but later had that marriage voided by the Supreme Court. Rosa Guerrero and Debbie Suster got married today, but a year ago when Suster had a heart attack, Guerrero says she was afraid the two wouldn't be recognized as a couple by medical staff. This means that Guerrero officially had no say about decisions regarding Suster's treatment. Legally, she had the status of a stranger, even when her partner of 28 years wasn't able to speak for herself.
If, you know, there was a decision to be made in the hospital, which thank God she made it. And so that's really the biggest thing, because really to ourselves, we've been married the whole time. We've always lived together. We've raised a daughter together. You know, so it's a piece of paper, but it's an important piece of paper, legally. It is.
I just wish it would be recognized federally, not just statewide.
This reporter did not observe any signs of protest at today's marriages. Madeline Damiano has a theory. She says probably many of the people who showed up in 2004 to protest gay marriage have since learned about the gay people in their inner circles or in their own families. One sign this reporter did see was on the window of a law office nearby, and it read, "Vow to vote no on the ban on marriage." Madeline Damiano and her partner, Gilda Desimone Grocha, aren't married yet. Damiano says now that it's a real legal option, they'll decide on the best way to do it. Damiano says her partner Gilda is the first person her family has ever fully embraced as her partner. The two say that this family support has added stability to their lives that many gay couples so far haven't been allowed to enjoy.
My experience has been when you get into some rough waters, friends and family and even therapists are very quickly to say, "Oh, it's not a good relationship, get out of it." They don't say that to married couples. They offer support and they try to get you through the rough spots. I really think that this is going to have a tremendous impact, and I think it's going to lead to greater stability for society at large. I think all the naysayers have it completely backwards. That's my opinion.
In downtown Fresno, over 100 LGBT couples waited to get married or get their marriage licenses. The first to wed was an African-American lesbian couple who have been together for 10 years. In November, California voters will decide whether to ban same-gender marriages with a constitutional amendment. Santa Clara County Supervisor Ken Yeager says he's feeling optimistic about how people will vote in November's election.
My feeling is that when people realize that this is something that is happening, that's something that means so much to so many people, I'd just be surprised if voters would go into the voting booth and willingly try to deprive that from people who have so much love for each other.
Here's Hannah Paul, who did get married this morning, to her wife, Ronnie Paul.
I can't believe I did it. That's it. That's it.
Reporting from San Jose for KPFA, I'm Rose Katabchi. Thanks to Mike Rhodes in Fresno, who also contributed to this report.
Free Radio 101.1. That was from Indie Bay and KPFA. South Bay and Fresno, San Jose marriages from last week. We heard also a couple pieces, one from Radio for All on Chip Fitzgerald, Black Agenda, and another Where'd it go? We had another piece too. Oh yes, of course, from KBOO, Cuba's new policy on sex change operations. So the next piece I want to play for you comes from pr.indymedia.org, Puerto Rico Independent Media Center, about the teacher's struggle. The listeners to this show have heard a considerable amount of background in the past couple of weeks, but let me just summarize by saying after years of organizing to create a more democratic union, a more an organization of teachers who are organized in their best interests rather than as a familiar kind of co-opting union where a weakened, watered-down contract negotiating bargaining team kind of teachers union actually works against the best interests of some of our most valued workers, teachers. After years of struggle, Puerto Rico's teachers created a more democratic, independent, teacher-operated labor union that worked in the best interests of teachers. In the struggle against a colonial government, Puerto Rico being a colony of the U.S. with limited rights, had a higher cost of living with lower pay and more exploitive conditions, even than U.S.-based, land-based schools. But Puerto Rico's teachers worked to create this union and organized and fought through the union for better pay, better benefits, and a valued and just workplace, control over their own destiny and their own workplace. Now, the U.S. labor movement in the form of SEIU in cooperation with the colonial government of Puerto Rico has come in an attempt to absorb the teachers into another union, a takeover in order to dismantle, appropriate the radical teachers union that Puerto Rico's workers have built up over the past couple of years. And they have the audacity to bring their conference, their like annual, you know, get together. The head honchos came to Puerto Rico, which was some huevos. But Puerto Rico responded with some pretty fierce protests. Not a blip on the corporate media radar, but it was a pretty incredible week in Puerto Rico. So I'm going to play a video from the 31st of May, posted to Puerto Rico Indie Media, pr.indymedia.org. Here it is. Stop Union Raid, reads the sign. I'll translate as best I can here.
Day with SEIU. We just wanted to bring you some water. Because it's hot. Do you have enough? Want some water? Okay, thank you.
We want to speak to the people. So you people know what your union is doing against us here. They're trying to destroy the United Federation of Teachers. And then put a pro-government union and then affiliate to you. And we believe that that's a union busting.
A union that organizes.
And I don't think that
we really just wanted to bring you water.
Thank you. Thank you.
We just want you to know
it. Okay.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
We don't need anything.
Vote.
Thank you. Thank you.
La determinación y si es un peso,
Mira, estos son los planos.
Rafael Feliciano, president of Puerto Rico Federation of Teachers. Well, SIU make an alliance with the government and the directors and supervisors, with the bosses, to fight against Federación of Maestros, Federación de Maestros. This is a rank and file union. We developed a strike last January and February, and we won most of our objectives. But Dennis Rivera, with Stern, made an alliance and made lobbying with the governor because they don't want that we sign the new contract, because they think that will affect the objective that have SIU to destroy our union and establish a business union in Puerto Rico in the teachers. We are now here to denounce Stern and to denounce Dennis Rivera and all the bureaucrats that are making alliance with the government and with the bosses to destroy our union. But also we are here to ask for support from the opposition groups inside of SIU and other members of SIU that are workers as we are and that have the same problem that we have. We want to share with the delegates what is our history and why the SIU is attacking us.
Union. What are they thinking about? They want power? Nah, man. They have to understand that we're the ones here to stay, bro. We're the ones here to stay.
¿Tú entiendes inglés?
Sí.
SIU, papi.
¿Ah?
Centralization. Mira, arriba para abajo. Se hacen mejor las uniones, ¿viste?
Hey, go down. We're going inside now.
Okay. Es la que se escucha.
There's a struggle between protesters and police outside the magisterial conference of SEIU, holding signs, SEIU go home. This video is called Teachers Attacked by State Police. We were told we were welcome here. No pirate sindicalistas. No to the pirate union. This is a public street. We have the right to be here. This is our conference. We're teachers. Teachers are being arrested, forced through the gates, who aren't being allowed, attacked with batons. These are teachers outside the conference of the labor union that's trying to represent them. In a hostile takeover, a corporate hostile takeover by the Change to Win coalition and the SEIU. SEIU go home. The chant had something to do with Shame on the police, your workers too, basically. So there's so much information on IndieMediaPR.org. The top feature right now is a roundup of the last 6 months in the teachers' movement. So if you read Spanish, I would urge you to check out pr.indiemedia.org for background on the teachers' struggle in Puerto Rico. SEIU Pirata Sindical. SEIU, the Pirate Takeover Union. There's also information on the Americas page of Indie Bay. About May, the 31st of May's conference with SEIU coming to Puerto Rico to formalize their attack. So there's lots of other stuff going on. There's a whole bunch of other stuff going on. Actually, you know what? There's an anonymous post that just came up. WikiLeaks gets hold of counterinsurgency manual. Interesting. That sounds good. The Foreign International Defense Tactics, Techniques, and Procedures for Special Forces seems to have been leaked online by the order of the Secretary of the Army, Milton Hamilton, Administrative Assistant to the Secretary of the Army, and Gordon Sullivan, General, United States Army Chief of Staff. I've signed on the bottom line of this counterinsurgency manual, which includes details on how to covertly train paramilitaries, censor the press, ban unions, employ terrorists, conduct warrantless searches, suspend habeas corpus, conceal breaches of the Geneva Convention, and make the population love it. WikiLeaks has released a sensitive 219-page U.S. military counterinsurgency manual. It may be critically described as what we learned about running death squads and propping up corrupt governments in Latin America and how to apply it to other places. Its contents are both history-defining for Latin America and giving the continued role of U.S. Special Forces in the suppression of insurgencies, including Iraq and Afghanistan, history-making. The leaked manual, which has been verified with military sources, is the official U.S. Special Forces Doctrine for Foreign Internal Defense, or FID. FID operations are designed to prop up friendly governments facing popular revolution or guerrilla insurgency. FID interventions are often covert or quasi-covert due to the unpopular nature of the governments being supported. Quote, in formulating a realistic policy for the use of advisors, the commander must carefully gauge the psychological climate of the host nation and the United States. WikiLeaks.org has How to Train Death Squads and Quash Revolutions from San Salvador to Iraq, and the U.S. Special Forces Counterinsurgency Manual. Check out WikiLeaks.org. That's hot off the press here on Indie Bay and the Americas page. Yes, indeed, you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, and this is the Indie News Wire. Play another song for you. UCSC students are gone for summer break. The Tree Sit supporters are therefore on high alert. During summer break, the UCSC Tree Sit is on high alert with expectations of a possible attack. In Berkeley this week, police, professional tree climbers, and cherry pickers were used to cut, climb, and supply lines. Similar techniques could be used here in Santa Cruz to remove protesters who've been in the trees since November. This pattern played out in Berkeley. An attack on the Oak Grove tree sitters coming a day after graduation. In Berkeley, tree sitters protect a grove of oak trees at the site of a planned athletic facility. Rather than waiting for the courts, Berkeley moved in, cutting lines and supports a day before a court decision on a long-standing lawsuit. Here at UCSC, tree sitters are perched high above the ground in redwood trees at the site of a planned biomedical facility. It's now in the eighth month. The protest opposes UC expansion plans to develop 120 acres of upper campus forest and add 4,500 new students. Supported by students, faculty, staff, and the Santa Cruz community, the Tree Sit stands in direct opposition to UC plans to develop the campus and dramatically increase enrollment. Earlier this year, UCSC lost a suit to restrict supporters from bringing food and supplies to the tree sitters. The judge ruled that the university was overreaching its attempts to restrict free speech. The UCSC Tree Sitter suggests if you care about the upper campus forest, support the Tree Sit. You can email upinthetrees@riseup.net. a bunch of photos and a bunch of comments from Dragon Lover and others. So, you know, the usual. Stay tuned. There's more about the tree sit. FM, www.freakradio.org. So, more from Indie Bay, more from Portland. Oh, Indie Bay has a lot of articles and comments about a rash of politically motivated property destruction, what some are calling vandalism, what some are calling activism. I just want to remind folks that this is not limited to Santa Cruz. Portland Independent Media Center author The Ungovernable says, downtown Olympia, Bank of America window smashed. Let the games begin. So this is a bit of a call out. Under the blue moonlight, during the first hours of June 17th, a lone rock crashed into one of the large windows of the downtown B of A. A large cobweb of cracks is there for all to see. This small act was done for all those facing police harassment, intimidation, and jail time from the events of May Day. May this be the rock you never threw. This small act was also done to show everyone in Olympia that there are no excuses. With the police crisscrossing the streets of downtown all night, someone was still able to smash a window. This small act was committed by a lone female, armed with nothing more than her determination and a rock from the Puget Sound. There are multiple targets in Olympia. There are multiple ways to attack those targets. Let this small act remind you it is always possible to resist. Let this small act remind you of your ability to smile. Let the small act inspire you to commit far greater acts. Let the games begin. Signed, The Ungovernable. Just a thought. You can post a critique of a target, or you can do something yourself. Whether you agree or not with targeted property destruction, well, my stand viewpoint on that in short is that, and it's something I've said on the air here before, 5 years into this war, it's time to escalate tactics. The movement needs to escalate beyond answer marches and film screenings. Those are wonderful outreach tools. In terms of the actual resistance, in terms of bringing the war home, in terms of demonstrating your ungovernability, as the name references here. If you're not going to put up with this anymore, it's time to actually make business as usual impossible. Make your ability to be governed impossible. So just a thought, one of those things. I support the escalation of tactics almost wherever I see it, because I don't see it everywhere, but there's a campaign of politically motivated direct action property destruction going on in this town and in towns on the west, in the west and elsewhere, and the dialogue that's generating, the debate over tactics, yet again, I say this every time there's some kind of event that pushes people's boundaries. Good. This is a good thing. The boundaries of those who are paying attention, the boundaries of those of us in the struggle need to be pushed. We need to be escalating, considering ways to do more and creative actions every single day, rather than critiquing others' actions and rather than doing the same old thing that we are perfectly aware does not and has not worked. So food for thought the day before a global day of action, solidarity with Zapatista communities and towns, municipalities. There's information all over the web about actions going around on all across the world, especially throughout Mexico, but all across the world tomorrow. And goodness gracious, tomorrow, I hope something's going on right here in town. I hope that listeners to this show, I hope that listeners to this station, I hope that readers of Indie Bay, I hope that folks are thinking this afternoon, this evening about, targets, actions, ways to, act out. Is that a problem? Is acting out a problem? Do we need to stay in line? Do we need to restrict our protest to certain acceptable boundaries? Up to you. Just a thought. What else have we got here on the Indie News Wire show? There's a couple of things from KBOO. There's a Press Watch episode and the Sexual Politics of Food interview. And those actions that I mentioned earlier, one of the most attention getting has been the breaking of the window at Green Space. That discussion is also ongoing at the Portland IMC, so stay tuned and or check that out online. Also from KPFT, there's an interview with Flor, the program Voz de la Tierra. We'll hear some of that later in the day. Those three things will be packed in before FSRN, before Free Speech Radio News at 5. Coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz is Democracy Now! At noon, followed by Earthbeat Radio, and then a couple of shows that I didn't play the last couple weeks, but apparently they're supposed to. Sagebrush Variety Show at 2, and If You Love This Planet at 3. So those programs will be on the air this afternoon on Free Radio Santa Cruz, before, again, you hear a couple of those archived shows from KBOO and KPFT, and then we join Free Speech Radio News at 5 p.m., which is the last story I have here. Free Speech Radio News finds itself in trouble. It's lost its funding. Free Speech Radio News is an extremely valuable grassroots media network. I think it's among the best things happening in independent media, and it deserves your support. FSRN.org is in funding crisis. Their website has information, Indie Bay has information, but FSRN has been given notice by the financially strapped Pacifica Foundation that it will be cutting its funding by more than $13,000 a month, effective immediately. In order to continue to produce a newscast 5 days a week, FSRN needs your support. So if you're the kind of radio listener that donates to Free Radio Santa Cruz, I thank you. If you're the kind of radio listener that donates to KPFA or the Santa Cruz one, KZSC, College Station, or, you know, who contributes online to one, I don't want to say charity, one organization or another. I would urge each and every one of you to give FSRN, your support as best you can, this week, this month, today. It's a daily and weekly newscast, that's truly global, that has reporters all across the world, doing extremely important work. It's one of the best produced daily news shows out there, and it's produced in such a way that the voices are truly independent. It's a weekly show, daily show where reporters again all over the world file stories that are then broadcast. The headlines come from it's just produced globally. There people are spread out throughout the planet, and it's one of the best sources for news from Colombia and from Nigeria and from Europe and from Southeast Asia, from Burma. You get news on FSRN that doesn't come to you otherwise, from reporters that are independent and who are struggling, doing hard work to bring these stories to you in a broadcast form. So I would again urge people to support Free Speech Radio News in any way they can this week, because they have lost a good chunk of their funding, effective immediately, and are scrambling to make up for that, losing their funding from Pacifica. I'm just going to read some of the stories on here. You know, are Iran weapons claims deja vu all over again? Nigerian offshore oil rig attacked. Colombian union leaders assassinated at an alarming rate. The VA accused of testing non-approved drugs on veterans with PTSD. The United Nations denounces sexual violence as a weapon of war. These are stories that are not on the corporate media. These are stories that you will not read about in the Sentinel. Okay? These are stories that are extremely important, that they get broadcast, that they get out, that those who have this information are able to put it on the air for you. The Department of Justice goes after perpetrators of mortgage fraud. These are stories that aren't getting on the air, other than on independent stations and other than through Free Speech Radio News. So one more time, FSRN.org, please support this station so that we can continue to broadcast it and so that you can continue to get this information off the air, on the air, on the internet. It deserves our support, financial and otherwise. So I'm going to put on a program, the Press Watch that comes from KBOO, and sign off for the day. So stay tuned. You're listening to the Indie News Wire show once again for the week of June 20th. Thank you for tuning in. And next week, hopefully, we'll have information about the lawsuit against ICE filed by the ACLU last week. And more information coming soon on the Indie News Wire about the Coalition for a Countywide Community Dialogue on Race, Poverty, Equality, and Justice, and all this and more. Local news, global news, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, and www.freakradio.org. This is Gogo Bordello.